Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim, and our guest today is Brian. So, Brian, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
For sure. So, hey, everyone. I'm Brian Sikansky. I live currently in a small town called Salida in Colorado. I relocated here after many years in California, and I'm all in on direct-to-consumer e-commerce. I work as a growth strategist at an agency called Common Thread Collective. And then I also run and co-operate a direct-to-consumer business called Cuppy, which I believe is how we initially got connected.
Yeah, sure. So if you want to just talk more about your direct-to-consumer business, like what specifically it's all about and just how you got the idea for it.
Yeah, so I can't take the full credit for the idea, but my co-founder, the story goes that he was at a dinner with his family around the holidays and saw what appeared to be just a styrofoam piece of garbage on the countertop. And so he went to go throw it away. His mom came over and said, "What are you doing, Kevin?" And he's like, "What is this?" And she's like, "Oh, this is how I actually dry your father's coffee thermos." And so he thought this could be an interesting idea to start prototyping. And shortly thereafter, I got a text message from Kevin, who I become friends with just working in the same industry as him, and he reached out asking for some feedback, and we started just going back and forth sharing an idea, and it quickly became apparent that we wanted to start a business. So we incorporated, I believe it was January 2021, and then it took about a year and a half of prototyping, going through the ideas around crowdsourcing, how we're going to fundraise, what kind of direction do we want to take the business. It took quite a bit of time, unexpectedly, to get to where we're at, but we officially launched June 2022 and have been growing it ever since.
So can you just talk more about, you know, Cuppy? Like, what exactly is it? How do you differentiate yourself from your competition?
Yeah, so Cuppy is a drying for any reusable drinkware. Right now, we're really heavily focused on reusable water bottles. So essentially, of course, I should have probably had one on camera to just show really quick. But essentially what it is, you know, it's two-sided, 100% silicone. You basically can put most major water bottles will fit, depending if it's a smaller size up or larger size up. You know, the key differentiator that we found very, very quickly was that when a lot of people purchase drying racks online, they're the generic companies that have been around for quite some time, really low quality, purchased basically, you know, just as a, you know, a move-in kind of checklist item. They really haven't been reevaluated. It's a space that hasn't been revisited. There's been pretty minimal innovation in just drying in general. And what we found very quickly was not only the versatility was really attractive to people, especially those kind of in the earlier stages, we were really looking a lot at like wine glasses and really like delicate drinkware. But then just with the explosion of reusable water bottles, you know, starting with like Hydro Flask and Stanley and Simple Modern, all these different water bottle companies that have emerged. And everybody has, especially families have, you know, not only one per person, but often multiple per person. And they've become even kind of a personality. So it very much so has just become an accessory for them. You know, a lot of people just love how it just kind of builds the habit. It's really easy to place it there. It dries them really effectively, mainly keeping it removed from the drying mat so that there's no issues with bacteria growth or condensation getting stuck. And it's just become a real hit. You know, we have hundreds of five-star reviews across Amazon and direct-to-consumer, a very, very small return rate. So yeah, we think we're really onto something and just really promised by the start of the business and where we can take it.
Your business, right? Is it all direct-to-consumer? Are you in retail now? Like what is, you know, what are you looking to get to in terms of, you know, where you're actually going to be reaching your customers going forward next year and even towards the end of this year?
Yeah, so we are, we're 100% digital. We are in Amazon now, so we launched that earlier this year. So I know some people have different definitions for direct-to-consumer. Amazon could be seen as a different channel, but we are in Amazon as well as direct-to-consumer. We have partnered and are starting to get the process started with a few major retailers, but we're starting digitally. So Cabela's is where we're going to first have our presence in a online retailer. There are a couple of smaller brick and mortar shops who have an e-com store that we've partnered through affiliate relationships that also carry Cuppy. So it's the beginning of retail for us, which we see as like the next frontier, one of the next frontiers for us in 2024. The process so far it's become very apparent how much slower the opportunity is with retail. The buying cycle plays into it. It takes more time to nurture those relationships versus, you know, you could spin up a Shopify store and run some Facebook ads and, you know, validate your product. And we know we have a lot of growth to do, not only direct to consumer wise and Amazon wise. So it's kind of a slow play for us on the retail front, but, you know, the moment that we get, a good buyer at the right retailer in advance past kind of the digital first opportunity, like we're in the process of getting set up with Walmart, Bass Pro Shop and a few others. So once those go live online, the goal then would then be to graduate into physical stores and then continue to invest into that channel as well.
Makes sense. So in terms of right now, like, what are you looking to get to? Like, what is your current monthly revenue? Where are you looking to scale to in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have aggressive revenue goals. I think this year we're probably going to end somewhere around, depending on Q4 season, in the kind of $500,000 to $600,000 range in top line revenue. Next year, we would love to hit $5 million. I think it's probably more realistic that we'll probably aim around or end around $3 million in top line revenue. And it really just depends on a few variables that, you know, since this is going into, well, this will be like next year will be our third operating year as a business, still learning a lot about like seasonality trends. We have some challenges with average order value that we're addressing by diversifying into other product categories. So depending on how those things hit, as well as with retail opportunities, you know, we think we could probably exceed those goals, but that's kind of where we're aiming, is sort of next year is probably like a $3 to $5 million range, which I realize is a really big range. But just given kind of how we've dialed Amazon, you know, the monthly revenue that we're seeing from that channel in particular, and bolstering that with enough inventory, we know we could certainly sell there. And then direct to consumer, you know, focusing on how do we get more efficient with Meta? How do we diversify into other channels, especially around organic, and using that to our advantage going into the new year. But Q4 is, our first Q4, we drove like $130,000 in top line revenue pretty unexpectedly. We knew that Q4 would be really, really big for us, but, and this is obviously relative to the tiny direct-to-consumer business that we were, but we know that it's a really big season for us. So expecting such a big bump in revenue and knowing that could be a really strong peak season for us is something we're excited to hopefully drive towards those revenue goals in 2024.
So what'd you say it's like the biggest challenge that's sort of preventing you, or, you know, in between this and getting to that $5 million number per year? Like, what is that? Is it more of like, you know, how many ads you can run? Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say this year, like, we had two major challenges. One was inventory. So Amazon, after a lot of hesitancy to launch into that channel for a variety of reasons, we eventually launched on Amazon and quickly learned that we're actually like a hit on Amazon. We've gotten the tag for Amazon's Choice a few different times for a few of our different ASINs. We're accruing a really healthy number of reviews very early on and holding over a 4.8 star review on our parent ASIN, which is fantastic. So we know that there's room to grow there and probably a lot more just opportunity with our ad strategy. And so what happened is in July, we had a profitable month. And then in August, we just got hit with inventory constraints. We couldn't fill essentially what was available at the FBA warehouse for us to really grow the channel month over month. And so addressing that is really key. Number one, like as long as we have enough inventory in stock at FBA, we know that we could sell through that at a really healthy tacos, ACOs, you know, getting organic sales and so forth. So, you know, I would say that's a big challenge is just making sure that we are continuously in stock and can continue spending at the levels that we need to sustain that channel. And then I would say the other challenge is really around, it's kind of a two-part challenge, but it really boils down to AOV, which then informs our difficulties with being efficient on Meta. So in Q4, we know that we could be really efficient with our customer acquisition costs, but with a low AOV product, you know, we sell our 2 packs for 26, 4 packs for 36, 6 packs for 46. We're just playing with a lower AOV product. We have really healthy margins, but when we can't spend enough to acquire customers, especially when you just have so many other players able to spend that much more dollars because they have higher AOV products, that's a challenge. So that's something that we're addressing is, you know, what are really easy cross-sell and upsell opportunities? What are some new products that we can roll out going into next year that will really bolster our average order value, which also turns into long-term value from customers as well. But when we're trying to capture and be more efficient on Meta, we really need to address that. So I would say, yeah, like inventory has been a constraint, especially on the Amazon side and just keeping up with the demand there, but then also, you know, being more efficient on direct to consumer when we spend on Meta so that we could drive down, you know, our customer acquisition or at least operate with a customer acquisition cost, which is pretty good, but just limited by our average order value.
So do you have a lot of returning customers? Like, you know, cause I guess I'm looking at the product, obviously it's like you have one per bottle essentially. Right. So it's like, if people are buying more water bottles, like, or if they're working out more, or drinking more wine, I see like all these examples, right. So they would need one for each, I guess, bottle. Right. So is that kind of, you know, your returning customers, people who are, you know, buying, you know, more water bottles and things like that, or what does that look like for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, our returning rate, like if you just look at Shopify numbers, which we don't believe to tell the entire story, mainly because we've noticed that whenever we've done announcements around Amazon drops, we get just like anecdotal responses around like, hey, I'm so excited that you're finally on Amazon, blah, blah, blah. So I say like our returning customer rate isn't very high. It's like less than 5% on Shopify. I think it's probably more closer to around 7 to 8% if I incorporate Amazon sales, because I do believe what we see is that people just love buying on Amazon for the sake of it being, you know, a reliable, trustworthy experience, prime shipping available, you know, no questions asked, return, like just the whole customer ecosystem that they've built, I think just attracts customers, and that doesn't obviously get reflected in Shopify. So it's still a problem. When I say people buy purchases and repeat purchases, it's usually around gifting. So people were excited to gift it as a present to, as like a stocking stuffer. Last year, we got a lot of inquiries around like all day gift messaging and like, hey, can you make sure that this is on time? Because I want to make sure that my, you know, my daughter gets this in time for Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever they're celebrating, right? So we get a lot of those notes. And to your point, I think like for Cuppy, yes, like having enough for enough of your drinkware is certainly a piece of it. I think people are just excited about it as like a cool, like unique product, as like a little water bottle accessory. And I think one thing we underestimate about water bottles, which is why like the industry keeps just like selling more and more and more, like, is realistically, we all just need one water bottle, right? Like one per person. And like that has a maximum market, but people want different sizes. They want different colors. They have it as a reflection of their personality. Maybe one water bottle is totally covered in stickers. So now they need the next one to cover in their stickers. Like it like evolves with each person as different trends happen and as their personality changes. And I think the same is true about Cuppy. Like when people learn about new colors, there's like a new color appeal to it. Or if there's a seasonality approach to it, or a more subtle detail as well is like when people think about like the aesthetics of their kitchen, right? Like, how am I decorating? Do I want more of a modern appearance? Do I want something a little bit more rustic? And like different colors fit different pieces of that. So it not only becomes like a practical item, there's definitely an aesthetic element to it, which reflects just being in a space where, you know, we're selling predominantly to, you know, most of our audiences, like particularly females, 35 and older, we're guessing a lot of like head of households, folks with kids and so forth. So, you know, there's definitely like, you know, home is where the heart is, I think is a mentality of this group. And, you know, we definitely want to cater to that by having enough variety. So hopefully that answers your question. And then
Yeah, it's definitely a cool product. Yeah. I was just curious. So in terms of, you know, technology, obviously now people are looking for the best ways to use AI, right? So is AI currently being used in the business? And if not, where do you see it potentially coming in and helping your business in the future?
Yeah, I mean, we're probably underutilizing AI. You know, we're keeping an eye on trends, and I certainly keep an eye on it, not only for Cuppy but what for I do in my full-time role is like, we don't get a lot of customer support inquiries. I know that's a really big lever for AI and a justification for it. There's certainly a lot of stuff you could do with AI in terms of like ad performance. But in terms of the amount of creatives that we run and the amount of campaigns that we run, it's pretty well managed. And when it comes to AI, like, we're leveraging a lot of like Advantage Plus on Meta, right? Like things that the systems can already do on our behalf. And we do use AI for generating copy ideas and like brainstorming. So I think it's a little bit more of like an aid in our current process today. But when it comes to like implementing it as like an actual process, we just haven't really had the use case for it at scale to really invest in like a proper AI strategy. We certainly are thinking about it and trying to keep an eye out for solutions there. But, you know, when you're running two channels, which like you don't need to have a ton of time overseeing them, you can kind of just run them, check on them daily or a couple of times a day, make sure nothing's breaking, testing a few new creatives here and there. And then also like our email production is pretty light compared to other brands. You know, we're a one SKU shop. So until we really diversify into multiple SKUs, really start generating, you know, significantly more monthly revenue, you know, that's, I think, where we're going to start to really think about it. But, you know, our ears are open. You know, we're both really involved in the direct-to-consumer community. My co-founder is especially hyperactive on D2C Twitter. And so we're definitely keeping our eyes out for solutions when it's applicable to our business.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one thing that, like, I always ask this question because we're working on an AI chatbot, you know, for e-commerce. I'm always curious kind of like what the use case is. And I think that, you know, just to your point, it has to make sense in terms of inquiries. You have to have lots of people or a certain amount of people reaching out to you, you know. But yeah, I mean, to your point, as you scale and have more SKUs, you might have more questions. But, you know, as of now, as you know, with one SKU, it's probably just more manageable.
Exactly. And like, you know, it's one of the things too that we're trying to be careful of, and I think this applies to any brand, right, is like, because we are a small business, because we have a particular voice, because we're trying to really build a brand, right, we're just making sure that if there is ever a solution that we incorporate, that it really can reflect the branded voice, right? We're not like a scale generic product where I think we can take more liberties there. And granted, like, you know, we might find out that customers don't really care about that as much as we think they think they do. But yeah, like, we're definitely intrigued by all those solutions. We've tried, like, we used to use like more proper software with AI capabilities for customer service. And we just found that we were spending more than we actually needed. It was too expensive. We had to keep OpEx lower for our business. And we were able to handle the, you know, maybe one or two inquiries we were getting a day just with a simple email response. And we have a gal who works part-time on Cuppy who's great. And she, you know, jumps into those and takes care of it. And, you know, it's not something we really have to worry about, right? And I think that's the thing too, is like, we probably haven't been forced our hand yet to really use an AI solution, which I think will probably need to happen, especially as we think about 2024 goals and really scaling into that kind of $3 to $5 million mark that I was referring to.
Makes sense. What would you say is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started Cuppy?
That e-commerce is extremely difficult. Yeah, don't believe all these people who can just drive, you know, seven-figure businesses in here. I don't know. It's a loaded question because I think it really gets like channel specific. You know, I think we did a lot of things really well up front. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to my co-founder too, who fortunately had like an opportunity where he could work on Cuppy full time for about 6 months, I think it was roughly. And he was able to make a lot of like day-to-day progress while this was like mainly a side hustle for the both of us. And we also had the support of two other folks who were formerly co-founders, but decided then to drop out. And I think we did a lot of things right. Like we invested in good brand, like good quality website. We tried working with a few different agencies. We sought creative from influencers and, you know, use UGC. And like, I think we did a lot of things right. I think what we probably would have gotten a lot more value from early on was really like, what are the key things we need to know and to do to really build organic and invest in that really early on? I know this just from working at a higher level in direct to consumer through my full-time role, that like organic is a huge challenge for many brands because it's just more saturated. It's harder to get ranked on these algorithms and so forth. And all these growth hacks that maybe serve brands early on and allow for them to hit quickly don't necessarily work again. But what does work is just like a really solid organic strategy built over time. And I think if we would have gotten advice on like how to execute that properly, not like, hey, you should do organic, but like, here is how you do organic properly and make it a system into your business so that you're producing this day to day and know that it's going to be a long-term payoff like SEO or some other long-term strategy, I think we would have benefited from that, especially now, because it's hard for a product like us. Like, how do you make kitchen accessories sexy? you know, it's not like Mini Katana who has like a sword that they can make like just greatly entertaining content from. We definitely have a challenge with that, with like making the product really eye-catching. And even though we've worked with numerous influencers who've taken their spin on, and UGC creators who've taken their spin on the product, ultimately it's the same value proposition. So yeah, if there was a genie who could give us that answer about how to crack organic, I think that would have been immensely helpful early on.
Makes sense. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out, do you mind sharing your company website or social media handles, just best way for somebody to find you guys and get in contact?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would say like you could reach me, you could reach my co-founder, Kevin. We're both pretty active on D2C Twitter. He's way more active than I am. So, you know, you could reach out to either of us. We're happy to talk shop. We're definitely looking, if there's brands out there who ever want to do collaborations or just share ideas, we're definitely open to that. We're very open with our business and where we're at. Not only our revenue, but our numbers, our challenges. There's no real secrets with Cuppy. So, you know, we're down to talk shop. I certainly have quite a bit of insight, you know, working in sort of the agency world at a company called Common Thread Collective. And Kevin he works also at a company called Fondue. So we're very invested in direct to consumer and certainly have perspectives on the space that we would love to share and just discuss as we continue building the business. And, you know, our goal, and we've talked about this kind of jokingly, but like, what would we do if we sold? Like, would we sell consulting services? Would we build a SaaS product, whatever? And at the end of the day, like, Kevin and I just care about like building good business and like just like helping people. So, you know, even if there is somebody who's like literally day one on their e-com business, if there's any value we could provide, which is sharing like the mistakes we made, lessons we learned early on, why we decided not to take the crowdfunding route, why we decided not to like take on banking loans, you know, and if somebody's genuinely curious, we're happy to share that.
Awesome. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your time today. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me on, and hopefully we could stay in touch, and thanks again for the opportunity.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Well, Dan, take care.
Thanks. All right. Bye.